from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Mina Kim. And for the rest of the hour, I'm happy to be joined by one of the so-called Fab Five, stars of the Netflix reality show Queer Eye. Each week, if you haven't seen it, they offer up advice to ordinary folks who really need it, I might add. Tips on how to remake themselves and their lives with more style, better clothes, food, hair, and almost always with an eye toward giving them more confidence and self-esteem. The fashion guru on the show is Tan France. He's written a memoir titled Naturally Tan, and it traces his life from rural England to starring in this hit TV show. Tan France, welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I mentioned just before the break, there's so many people in the building. Oh, Tan France is coming. We've got to come down to say hello. You got a lot of fans here in the Bay
Area. That's nice to hear.
Yeah. So we're going to get to the book in a minute. But you know, for those who haven't seen the show, I just gave a quick summary of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's the fundamental message of Queer Eye?
Connection. People assume that it's a makeover show. There is a makeover that's conducted during the show, but that is absolutely secondary to what we're doing. The show is about connection and showing just how alike we all are. And so we're trying to bridge divides between the LGBTQ community and the heterosexual community.
And this is version two of the show. Years ago, it was Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Yes.
The last part got dropped.
Yeah.
Why? Do you know? I mean, you weren't part of that original version.
No. Well, I would like to believe it's because we've realized that it's not just straight men who might need our help. There are people within the gay community who could use some support, or LGBTQ community that could use some support and love, and just be made to feel a lot more confident than they ordinarily have done in the past.
And as I mentioned, you're the fashion guy.
Yes.
Do you find yourself, you know, wherever you are, you're very recognizable, especially with your great
yes.
hair, the salt
Thank
and pepper
pump. Yes.
Pump. Do you get a lot of people stopping you and asking you for advice? That must drive you crazy.
No, it doesn't drive me crazy. Well, they're not asking me today because I'm in my sweats.
I was surprised, I have to say.
Well,
I thought more than usual about what I was going to wear.
Well,
you're here.
I don't usually wear sweats in my disguise. I'm going to the airport straight after this.
Yes.
So I usually have a cap that I wear real low because people don't expect me to wear sweats or a cap. So
there's a whole chapter on sweats, isn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah. So it's my airport disguise. But yeah, normally wherever I am, people will get nervous and say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I should have made more of an effort. That's never how I'm feeling. Like, as long as you feel good in what you've won, I'm fine.
Is your husband traveling with you, Rob? I want to ask you about him, but is he with you?
Not on this part of my tour, but he has been up until like 2 days ago.
You talk in the book, of course, about growing up. You're the son of Pakistani immigrants growing
yeah.
up in South Yorkshire, mm-hmm. England.
Yeah.
Probably not a lot of people who looked like you.
No.
There. And you were the subject of bullies, you and your brother and probably the rest of your family at times.
Yeah. You know, it's I've mentioned this. Since the book, I'm on a book tour right now, and I've met somebody asked me before, gosh, you really went through a lot of bullying, and I'd never thought of it that way. I never thought about it that way. They're a bunch of racists, but when I think of bullying, I see it. I've always seen it as quite specific, and it's something you suffer at school or with your hometown kids.
But in the book, you talk about having to run home while your
yeah.
brother kind of faced the kids that
well,
wanted to beat you up.
I think here's the strange thing. I think I've always equated, this is ludicrous, but I've always equated bullies with people who are usually within your peer group. These were not. People within them. You never knew who was going to attack you. It could be a 20-something-year-old person when I was 7. So I don't know if that's bullying at that point. Isn't that just harassment?
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, nowadays we've redefined everything. So
yeah.
Bullying
yeah.
has taken on a larger definition.
Yeah.
We're talking with Tan France, one of the stars of Netflix's Queer Eye. His new book is called Naturally Tan. And this is a half-hour segment, so let's open up the phone lines. I suspect some folks want to talk with you. 866-733-6786 is the number. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. I mentioned your husband, Rob, and
yeah.
It'd be hard to imagine a less likely place for a British Pakistani Muslim to find the love of his life in Salt Lake City. But you did.
I did.
How did you connect?
On something called Connection. It was a website that was around many, many, many years ago. And we met online, and you know, some things are just meant to be. They're just destined to be. And I met him online. He pursued me, asked me if I wanted to go on a date. I said no. He wore me down for a few days and then we went on a date.
Why'd you say no?
I had a grand plan to be single for a year. I had just come out of a bad relationship and it had been a while since I was single and I just wanted to collect myself and know that I was going to be in the best position possible to be the best partner possible. And so I wasn't looking for a partner. But as it commonly goes, when you're not looking, that's when you find it. And that's when I found it. And I couldn't turn it down. It was just too wonderful. And he was the perfect first date. And we've been together for 11 and a half years now. We've been married for 10 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's bliss.
And he, as you describe him, is a Mormon cowboy.
Yeah.
And you, as I mentioned, your family's Muslim. How did those two very different, although in some ways not so different, religions, a lot in common, I guess you mm-hmm. might say. How did that play out between the two of you and with your families?
Well, here's the thing. That's it. We both come from particular faiths that some might say are relatively strict. And so we had similar upbringings. We had the same modesty requirements. We didn't drink. We didn't smoke. We didn't do any of those things. And so actually it was the most perfect fit outside of my own religion that I could have found. I'd been dating for a long time and I'd never met somebody who was a closer fit. Even though we were raised worlds apart, literally a world apart, he was from a ranch in Wyoming. I was from a small town in England. But our upbringings or our morals were so similar and our values are so similar. And so that's why I think my religion lends itself well to his and vice versa.
It's interesting to hear you describe your morals.
Mm.
How does that fit in with your other? You have these four other stars, the Fab Five. Mm. And, you know, how do you each work, you know, making room for yourselves? Because to me, it seems like, you know, Jonathan Van Ness, his personality, like, is so big.
Yeah.
Like, how is there room for anybody else?
You know, he has more grace than most. He could absolutely be the only star of that show. Absolutely he could. Because he's so entertaining. And he is just somebody that my eye goes to him. Every time he's on screen, my eye goes to him. Because he is a star. However, he has the grace to back off when he knows that one of us wants to say something, one of us has something important that we need to say. And so he has the grace to allow us to do that, which is wonderful. And that's not to denigrate any of the others. The others, every one of them is incredibly talented. They have so much great stuff that needs to be done or said. And so they manage to make sure that that's seen. But Jonathan Van Ness, you are right. Like, he is such a bold, big character. It could be very easy for us to get lost in his shine. But yeah, he's graceful enough to not let that happen.
Your hair is such a big part of, I think, your look.
Yes.
Terrific. Does Jonathan give you advice about grooming?
Yes. He isn't the biggest fan of my hair. He likes the overall look. He just wants me to use different product because he would like it to not look. He describes it as, which
what
means
does that mean?
He wants it to look not dry, but I like the dry look. I do not like a wet look. And so,
so
yeah,
you just blow dry it?
I blow dry it and then I put a bit of pomade in it. And so I like it to look as natural as possible. And I want to, you know that feeling where you'll run your fingers through your hair? Did you ever used to use that gel or anything?
I saw you guys on Stephen Colbert running. Somebody ran their fingers through his hair.
Me.
But yeah,
yes.
Oh, was it you? Yeah.
Yes, it was. Did you ever use gel as a kid?
Not as a kid, no.
Or anything that felt like sticky in your hair?
Never.
It's a horrible feeling. It really is. Like, you want to be able to touch your hair and not remove your hand and think, ew, I've got gunk all over my hands.
Yeah.
And so that's why I keep my hair feeling very, very natural. I don't want to feel uncomfortable touching my hair or worried that somebody might touch it and feel something greasy.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem so perfect.
And
I'm not going to ask to run my fingers through your hair. But if I did, would it stay up like that?
Mostly, yes. There could be a very strong gust of wind and it will bounce right back into position. However, ordinarily I do not let Stephen Colbert is the first person I've ever let touch my hair other than my barber.
Okay, or maybe your husband.
No, he's not allowed to touch my hair.
Get out.
He's not allowed to touch my hair. He's not allowed to touch
wow.
my hair.
Okay.
That's just the way it is.
All right, there's certain, we don't have time to
there
go
are
into
certain
it.
Fights that or certain rules that I have and that's one of them. Don't touch my hair.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. Chris in Vallejo, you're first.
Hi, I was wondering what you thought about all the, conformity in men's fashion. I used to go around to all the department store windows in New York with my mom, and you see all this variety in women's clothes, and I'd go, oh, look, it's a jacket and a tie and a vest and slacks. Oh, and this one has a vest, a jacket, and tie and slacks, and it was just all the same box.
Yeah. I think the tides are turning slightly, very, very slowly. But don't get me wrong, I don't love that they are the only options for men and that it's encouraged that we shop in those departments and that these departments are segregated. However, over the last few years, I've become very comfortable heading over to women's wear. I will often find jeans that fit me better, pants that fit me better, a jacket that's more interesting. And most of the time, you would have no idea that I purchased it from the women's wear department. And so, yes, the options may be more limited in menswear, but my advice is stroll over to women's wear and don't feel embarrassed by going through the women's wear racks. Yes, I know the sales associate will come over and ask if you're looking for something for your wife. Ignore
that.
Not
in San Francisco.
Oh, really? Oh, that's nice. I live in Utah. That's definitely a question you'll get asked a lot. Ignore that silly comment and just continue to shop, or actually be bold and say, no, I'm actually looking for myself. Thank you very much.
All right, Chris, thanks very much. Again, if you want to talk with Tan France, the number to call, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. I want to play a clip from one of the episodes, and I should say that seasons 1 and 2 were mostly in Georgia.
Well,
all in Georgia.
Uh-huh.
In and around Atlanta.
Yes.
The season 3 was in Missouri and Kansas.
Yes, Kansas City, Missouri.
Kansas City, Missouri. And I want to just play this clip. One of the terrific episodes featured, I think it was the first duo that you did,
the sisters.
Mary and Deborah Jones, also known as Shorty and Little, and they're the owners of Jones Barbecue in Kansas City. And their restaurant got a full makeover on the show. And here's a cut from the episode before they got the Fab Five treatment.
I want you to just think every morning, I'm going to put this nice thing on, I'm going to look in the mirror and tell myself, I am beautiful, I am powerful, I am a boss, and then the rest of the day, I'm going to feel good about myself. Sound good to you, Shorty? The lovely Shorty, I can tell that she doesn't feel beautiful, and it might be hindering Shorty's confidence.
There is so much, what's the right word? I don't want to say mental health, but psychology maybe is a better way to describe it. In each of the heroes, as you call them in the show, how do you personally approach that? Because you're not trying to make them into fashion models.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
So how do you approach that, knowing that underlying some of what they're facing is really deep inside?
You know, if you have read the book, or when you read the book, you will see what I went through to get to this point. I definitely wasn't seen as somebody desirable. Definitely wasn't seen as desirable. And so I've spent my whole life on the hero side of things. So whenever I meet a hero, I think, what would I want to be told in this situation to make me feel better? Thankfully, I'm in a much better position now where I do have the confidence that I craved so hard when I was younger. And so now I'm in a position to be able to say, I understand what they may be feeling right now. And so I'm going to tell them exactly what I would have wanted to hear in that situation.
Do you ever, I don't know what the word, not worry, but think about that, you know, a lot, to the extent that people say on the coasts, the coastal elites are watching this show, there's going to be a temptation to judge a lot of these folks, their living situations, you know, their weight, whatever it might be. Do you see your role as partly pushing back against that and helping the viewers see people for who they are and what's beautiful about them?
Absolutely. The show may seem like we are going into mostly straight homes and giving them a makeover, and we're giving the world an opportunity to see what the LGBTQ community is like and to embrace us and love us, and that is a message we push forward. But it's balanced by us saying to anybody who is in these coastal states, these are the people who are in the middle of America. Do we call it middle America? Middle America. There's a lesson on both sides to be learned, as far as I'm concerned. Yes, we want the straight community in the Midwest or the middle of America to understand what the LGBTQ community is all about, which is why we're so expressive about who we are. But for anybody who doesn't come into contact with the people that we have on our show, our heroes, this is an opportunity for them to understand they are people too. Yes, you may think negatively of them because of the things that you just mentioned, but they have the same feelings, the same concerns, the same desires that we have in coastal states. And just to make it clear, I'm not from a coastal state.
No.
I live in Utah.
In Utah, yeah. And we should also say that the five of you also have some of the same insecurities that many of the
Absolutely.
Guests have, and some of the experiences of coming out or being criticized or bullied or whatever
Absolutely.
It might be.
Absolutely. And so that's why I think that we're in such a strong position. Actually, none of us on the show are from coastal states, but Bobby and Jonathan are actually from the area surrounding Kansas City, Missouri. Jonathan's from Illinois. Karamo's from a smaller town in Texas. We are from smaller towns. We understand the mentality in those towns concerning the LGBTQ community, but also the straight community. So we have a perspective that I think is more expansive than just we live in New York and LA. We don't understand what's going on in the rest of the world.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Hannah in Oakland, you're next. You're on with Tan France.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a Latina, also identify as bisexual, but I am moving with my partner to Boulder, Colorado. I was wondering if Tan had any advice being a brown face in a majority white space. I'm fairly young and am just seeking advice.
Hannah, I'm so sorry. I missed it. Scott, did you hear the question exactly?
Yeah, well, she's Latina and, wondering just as a person of color, yes. what advice you might have for, you know, someone living in a place that is majority white. She's going to be moving to Colorado, I think.
Ah, okay. Oh, hi, Hannah. So Colorado is actually quite similar to Utah. They're basically one and the same. and so I live in Utah. And so my advice, this is going to be difficult for you, but there aren't that many people of color in Utah, and I'm assuming that's the case in Colorado also. And so we have a burden to bear. It's just the way it is. It's just the way the world works. We have to be the best versions of a person of color. So where people within the Caucasian community have the luxury of being able to shout and scream if they're not happy, we don't have that luxury. We have to act with poise and grace at all times and not raise our voices and be polite and be thankful. And so unfortunately, that's just how one has to be. However, what I also do is push back. I will ask the questions that they definitely don't want to be asked. I will give a perspective that maybe they haven't heard before. I don't dim my shine for anyone. I don't dim my brownness for anybody. And so what I will say is continue to express that you want to dress a certain way. You want to eat the food you want to eat and you want to experience your culture. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. And people will have to allow that. But we have to walk with dignity and grace.
Hannah, what fears do you have about moving there?
Just re-identifying myself as Latina. I have walked the space of being bisexual and Latina. I haven't come out to my family, and they live in Colorado. Just the cultural aspects of being Latina and bisexual.
This is such a hard topic to give you my opinion in a soundbite. This is truly not a plug for the book. You don't have to buy the book, but you can get it from a library and just borrow it. I talk extensively about this in the book. It's the reason I wrote the book. And the first chapter, I talk about how difficult it was to focus on my homosexuality when I was already having to deal with being brown in a white community. And I didn't have the real estate in my mind to be able to tackle both of those things because I was being attacked for being a person of color. Please read that chapter even if you don't read the rest of the book. I really want you to understand my perspective on that, and I hope that helps.
Anna, good luck, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Here's a comment from David who writes, my daughter's getting married in the fall. I need to buy a suit for the first time in 20 years. My budget is somewhere between Bargain Basement and Armani. That's a big range.
Wow. Oh, you're
Go for the Armani,
position.
I'd say.
Yeah, easy.
any recommendations as to what I should be paying attention to.
Okay, here's my honest opinion. I do not spend a fortune on clothes. You will often see on my social media that I'm on red carpets. I'm in designer clothes. I do not keep them. They are loaned to me and I give them right back just as every other person on the red carpet does. What I do in my real life is I buy an accessible suit. I'm probably not allowed to say brand names on here. So I just did.
Go
okay. On. So like mall stores like a J. Crew or Brooks Brothers or Banana Republic, you know those stores, any of those stores that do suiting. They don't do suiting impeccably, but they do suiting. And then take that suit, which is a reasonable price point, it's not a luxury price point, and then take it to your tailor and make sure it's custom to you. It's still going to be so much cheaper than a designer suit, but it's going to look like an incredibly expensive suit, if not a bespoke suit. So buy inexpensive and tailor. And to get a suit tailored, I don't know what the prices are like in San Francisco, but if it's more than $150, I'll be surprised.
You have a funny story in the book about your wedding and the suits that you and Rob bought.
Yes.
And just before the wedding, he was unhappy with the way his fit, and you acknowledge it didn't look great on him, but yours looked really good on him, and you switched.
Yeah.
That is like the ultimate selflessness.
Well, thanks. Here's the thing. He used to struggle. He felt a lot of pressure. I'm in this industry. I was in the fashion industry, and so style came easier to me than it did to him. And so I had purchased a suit that was wonderful and it fit me to perfection. And he hadn't managed to figure it out. And I wanted him to be the most comfortable he could possibly be on our wedding. And so I wore his suit and it fit me terribly.
And when you look at the photos now,
one photo. I hate those photos so much because I look atrocious.
But he loves you for it, I'm sure.
Yeah, he was super grateful.
Here's another comment from Laura, who asks, how have the guests on the show influenced you either in fashion or in life?
Okay, I'd be lying if I said they've influenced me in fashion. I'm sorry. That may sound snarky, but it's just true.
You're not wearing oversized red T-shirts.
No. And I'm not living in gym shorts. But what I will say is that they have opened my mind as far as who I can connect with. For the longest time, especially when I was younger, if you had told me that I'd be sitting in somebody's home or in a restaurant having dinner with somebody who was so against my political views, I'd think that you were out of your mind. And now I find that regardless of what people's political affiliations, I can find a connection and find the humanity in that person. And that is a really interesting turn for me.
You know, sometimes I wonder, you know, you guys go in, you turn these folks' worlds, you know, upside down in a good way. The place they live is completely redone. They look fantastic. They're ready to go to the business meeting or whatever it might be with confidence. But what happens like 3 months later?
Well, the lovely thing is we have the luxury of social media, and all of them are on social media, so we get to call them out if they don't keep it up. So you know how there were those shows back in the day where they'd revisit like a year or so later? We are constantly looming large over them whilst they're posting. So if they're posting something that isn't on brand for what we encourage them to do, we will contact them and say, hey, get it together.
What happened with the barbecue women? I mean, did their brand of hot sauce take off?
Yes, I saw them last week, and they are killing it. They looked incredible. They were so much happier. And I asked them, you can be honest with me. Tell me the truth. Are you happy that you did it? Has it changed your life for the better? And they were like, it has been a dream. We truly cannot ever express our gratitude for the show. It has changed their lives completely.
Well, they were like killing themselves working at that place.
Yes.
And giving away hot sauce.
I mean, it was reported at one point, I can't say if this is true or not, but it was reported in many articles that they made over $100,000 in the first month after we left from the hot sauce. That's incredible.
They earned it.
That's life-changing.
They earned it. All right, let's go back to the phones. Antonio in Oakland, you're next. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for taking my phone call. So how do you recommend to pack if you're traveling abroad and you want to look presentable, but not to carry on tons of luggage, small bag, and just go for it?
Where are you going? Hot country or cold country?
Europe.
Okay.
In the summer?
Yeah.
Okay, it's hot right now.
Or in the fall, actually.
Oh, in the fall, it's still hot. It's still very warm.
That's tough because you gotta, you know, it can be cool at night.
Yeah. So I try and pack as light as possible. I do like to try and take a carry-on only. And so what I will say is wear your outerwear on the plane, and they will sometimes hang it for you, or at least you can put it in the overhead bin. So take one piece of outerwear, just because you want to be able to layer. And then I will wear a pair of jeans and then take a pair of jeans, because nobody's going to care if you've worn the same jeans over and over again. And so then I fill my suitcase with shirts, and I will take one formal shoe and I will wear my casual shoe. And then I'm assuming you're not going away for longer than a week. You don't need more than 2 to 3 pairs of shoes maximum.
And things that will match.
Yes.
I mean, so simple.
Yeah, so I keep a very, very simple tonal suitcase. So go for neutrals and maybe a pop of something just if you want a fancy night out. But you can fit like 7 or 8 shirts into a carry-on suitcase as long as the rest of your suitcase is relatively minimal.
All right. Buen viaje, Antonio. Thanks for calling. Divya in Fremont, you're next.
Hi. I hadn't heard of San Fran until listening to the show, and I was just very curious, since you said Pakistani Muslim, name the origin of how you have your name.
Are you still there? Are you asking why is my name Tan France?
Or how it came about?
Sorry. My name is Tanvir, but my family have always called me. I've never actually been called Tanvir by anyone. Even my mum calls me Tan, and always has. And so Tan was always my name. And then I married my husband. His name is Rob France. And so when we got married,
he took your name.
I took his name. Yes. No, his name's Tan France. Sorry, Rob France. Sorry. His name's Rob France. So I took his name. And so now I'm Tan France instead of my original name.
Oh,
I took his name. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. I missed that. Okay. Yeah. Does that answer it, Divya?
Yes, thank you.
Of course.
Okay.
Oh, and one more thing. People often ask on the to add to that. People often ask, "Is the French tuck called the French tuck because I'm Tan France?" The answer is absolutely no. It was called the French tuck. I just so happened to be Tan France. I mean, it's a very happy coincidence.
The tuck thing.
Yes.
Is there too much left untucked, do you think?
I'm sorry, Scott.
I untucked.
Sorry, it is not the tuck thing. It is the French tuck. Come on. It's such a big thing now. Yeah, it's half tuck at the front. It took on a life of its own. I never expected it to become what it's become. It's insane.
Yeah. All right, we're going to leave it at that. Tan France. Naturally Tan is the name of his new memoir. Check it out. It's a good read. A lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming in. And when you walk out of here, I think you might have a few selfies to be taken.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.